I'm Barbara Wysocki, president of the Champaign County League of Women Voters, and today we're doing the second of our interviews with some of our elder league members as a way of tapping into their history as well as the history of league in this county. Today we have Jan Anderson with us. Jan was president of League back in the late 70s, early 80s, but there's certainly a lot more to Jan's background and career than just simply 2 years as a League president. Also in the room today are Anka Voss, who is the director of the Urbana Free Library Archives.
Champaign County Archives.
That's right, it's Champaign County's Archives. At the Urbana Free Library. And Deb Rugg, who is another outstanding League member and who has been largely responsible for organizing not only this interview, but some of the others that we'll be doing in this series. So, Jan, can we start a little bit with your personal background?
Okay.
You are not native to Champaign County.
No. Do you want me to just
go? Yeah, go ahead.
I grew up in Pennsylvania, kind of just getting into the northeast. Berwick is downriver, about 40 miles from Wilkes-Barre, Scranton. I went to school there up through high school. My family, there were four children. I was the second, so I'm a middle child. And my very stable family, we lived actually about 3 miles out of town. Everybody knew everybody. And it was kind of a different day than this. I'm really the first one in my family to go beyond high school. My dad really, my mother too, really wanted something more for their kids than they had. They just went to grade school. And at that time, of course, for women, it was mostly choosing either teaching or nursing. And when we had, I'm not sure if it was a fair, but we had people come to high school to talk about various possibilities. And there were two nurses from the Williamsport Hospital School of Nursing where I actually ended up, that kind of sparked my interest. And I had a teacher that taught history that really encouraged my mother to think of something for me to do, you know, beyond high school, because I love school, and I did well. And she thought I should really, you know, do something, but I didn't really know what until. But I did end up then going to nursing school, and I graduated from high school at 16, so at that time they really didn't want to take me at 16. They wanted somebody more mature to be 18. But my dad, like I say, had a grade school education, but he was very interested in everything, and I started out in a one-room school. And went through fourth grade, and my father really pushed for consolidation, for us to go to Berwick schools. Lost a number of his friends for doing that, people who thought what was good enough for them was good enough for their kids. But that didn't bother him, you know, too much. But he was also very convincing with the director of nurses, telling them how mature I was, and that if I didn't start right away, he was afraid maybe I might lose interest, or and there wasn't really that much as far as finding a job in the interim. And so she decided to take a chance on him.
And what did your father do?
I guess you would call him a steel worker. There was a plant there that really was the heart of Berwick, that made railroad cars. So he was like cutting steel. And my mother was a homemaker. And like I say, it was a very stable life. We had lots of relatives within. My dad was one of eight, and my mother was one of five. And so most of my aunts and uncles lived within, at least within driving.
And your mom taught piano, you said?
Yeah, she played piano at the church for 60 years. She had had a teacher for a short time, but she would have made a wonderful scholar if she had gone on to, say, college. So she taught lessons to kids in the community that really couldn't afford to go somewhere else, and she was very reasonable and very patient. And like I say, I had one older sister and two younger brothers. And so I think that's probably enough about that.
Well, and how did you find nursing school? Was it difficult because you were younger? Was it everything you thought it was going to be?
It was pretty much, like I say, the two people who came and talked to the group at high school were from that school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I think I adapted really well. It's a different kind of day than now.
Well, then you had to leave home to go to nursing school.
This was about 60 miles from home, so it wasn't that far. And got to go home, not every weekend, but maybe once a month or something like that.
Okay.
And there were a couple of other young women from the area that also went, and, you know, parents would take
turns. Oh, so you buddied up, and, okay. And where was, after you got out of nursing school, what was your first job?
Well, I worked a year at my own hospital. I worked nights. There were pay in those days. It was very low. There were four of us living in an apartment and, sharing and working there. And I met my husband, Ansel, or Andy, while I was still in nursing school. He was from Warren, which is a couple hundred miles away. It's in the northwestern part of the state. Went to Allegheny in Meadville. And while I was in nursing school at that time, you were required to take a psychiatric affiliation for 3 months. And this was before the psychotropic drugs, and a lot of people were in these huge hospitals. And so I had gone to Warren State Hospital during the summer. I guess it was after my second year. And he was home from college during that time and lived in North Warren where the hospital was. And of course, the local boys were always checking out the nursing school. and we had to live in a nursing dorm. And we called it the Avenue. That went directly down to this little hot dog place where they sold hot dogs and soft drinks and stuff. And local boys would be in there. But actually, I met him. Some of the patients had a softball game, you know, with staff, and we're outside, and we were watching, and we just started talking, and neither one of us had any money, so we spent most of the summer just taking walks, and a very pretty place in the mountains, and a really nice stream there, and so he went back to school, and I went back to school, but as I told my kids at his service, at my grandkids, we didn't have cell phones, computers, and so we wrote letters, actually. And, you know, the thought for them of writing letters is just completely foreign.
Oh, yeah.
And so then I went up for weekends, sometimes when there was something special at Allegheny, and stayed with one of his friends, a woman that was also in physics. And he came down for my graduation, and then I decided to, so we could see each other a little bit more, I took a job then at that hospital after I'd worked a year at Williamsport. And there were really five large buildings at this hospital with various, levels of. I actually worked in Stone Building, which was, we called it the infirmary. Half of it was for patients there. Mm-hmm. You might fall, have a fracture, or, various reasons. And the other part was for employees that we treated.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess I just worked there a year, and then he had graduated, and we got married and went off to Connecticut for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we arrived at Illinois was that, when he went to Connecticut too, he was, his advisors at Allegheny just thought that's where he should go for his master's.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent 2 years there. And then when he decided to go on for the PhD, his advisor there, who was head of the department, it was a small department, but thought that the only place he should go was the University of Illinois.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a great department, but he also knew some of the faculty here. And we were lucky when we came in the summer, one of them kind of took us under their wing, and he had a job for the summer with Halsizer.
What year was that?
That was 1957. We got married in 1955. And we always thought we would be going back east, but here we are.
Oh, yeah.
He ended up getting his PhD, and they offered him a position on faculty. And it was a time when there were lots of jobs available. He interviewed, I think, GE and Bell Labs, a couple of Michigan, mm-hmm. Northern Michigan State, probably made him one of the best offers because they were trying to build up their department.
Mm-hmm.
So we took the lowest paying job and stayed here because it's a great department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he decided that he really liked the academic rather than the industrial, which was what he had a leaning for in the beginning. And so he spent his whole career here, and so I'm still here too, and we had two children, and they both stayed in the area. Well, Alan was down in North Carolina for 9 years, but they came back. And so...
So, and when you came here, and Andy went on for his PhD, did you get a nursing job?
Yeah, I started working at Carl. I was telling somebody this just recently. I started working at Carl, and I was in the med-surg area, and seemed like a new building, but it's one of the buildings that's been torn down, and everything is so different over there now. But I worked there until I was 6 months pregnant. And the policy then was you could not work past that. I felt fine. We could have used the money, but I had to quit. And compare that to my daughter, who worked in the X-ray department.
Oh, my.
And when she had her first grandchild, her water broke, and she went up and checked herself in the day.
Oh, my
God. But, even young nurses now, when they hear that you had to quit, they say, really? And, yeah, really.
Yeah.
They did. And then I took a few years that I just was with my kids. My mm-hmm. son is 2 years younger than Gail. And then I guess I went in just a couple of times. Like, I wasn't on a registry, but they used private duty nurses mm-hmm. in those days sometimes too. And I felt a little bit away from it, so I was listening to the radio one day, and Sister Beverly was talking about having a refresher course for nurses, and this was before Parkland was in their buildings, but they had classes mm-hmm. all around town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just called up for some information, and the next thing I knew, I was signed up for the refresher course.
Mm-hmm.
And as a part of that, I kind of kidded Andy, because we had our classes out on West Springfield in what was once a grocery store. So part of it was for nursing, and the other part was for physics.
Oh.
I said, I'm in the same building as you are. and then also, besides the classes, we had hands-on. I'm trying to think what you would call it. And I went to Burnham.
Oh, it was clinical?
Right, clinical. And when that was over, I took a job then at Burnham. Was kind of a float. I worked half-time wherever they needed me, and then ended up working on orthopedics.
Okay.
So I worked there for a couple of years, and then I did some home nursing. I was actually working under an insurance company. I worked with a quadriplegic for a couple of years.
Hmm.
And then had a call from Dr. Shepherdson's, well, not his wife, directly a friend, and they needed someone in his office today. And I'd never done that, but I thought, well, I guess I can help. I was kind of between jobs and ended up staying there 17 years.
Mm-hmm. Is that where you met Sandy Volk? Or did you know her before?
I probably knew her a little before, but Sandy worked part of the time in the lab. We had a small lab there, and a lab tech, and she came in on the weekends usually.
So you're here in a nursing career. You're raising children. How do you get interested in League?
Well, I had a neighbor, and we would have coffee, and our kids were kind of similar age, and we had lots of kids on the block, but Alberta Perkins was a League member. She isn't anymore, but she was a League member, and we would be talking issues, and she kept saying, "You really ought to join League of Women Voters," and then we went on sabbatical to Finland for a year, and when we got back again, it was the end of summer, and Roberta said, "How about going to the membership meeting that they were having? They would, in September, have a tea and invite prospective members." And I remember that year, it was at, I can't remember her first name, but it was Jack Pelvison's house. He was the chancellor.
Yeah. Okay.
Was it Susie? Something like that. She was a League member and active with our League during that time. And I signed up, and that's how I got the League. And it seemed like a good group. And
so is your League membership what got you involved in other parts of local politics, civic affairs? Or was it the civic affairs that really strengthened your League membership?
Well, I think probably League affected that. Was always kind of interested in issues, but I guess before joining League, when they organized the Urban League in the mid-60s, Andy and I went to one of those first meetings, and then it didn't exist for some time now, but there was an Urban League Guild, and I was very active with that. And at that time, it was mostly to get some interaction between blacks and whites, and it was pretty evenly divided. I mean, just by chance it turned out that way. We probably had 30 or 40 members and met regularly, and most of our activities were socializing and raising funds for scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was probably that, and being involved with district nurses, mostly my probably civic activities before I joined League. And then I was telling Debbie, out of my interest in health and women, you know, kind of issues, So that would have been, I think, 1967 when I joined League. And then Nell Leonard. Did you know Louise Leonard or Nell? She probably died before you came, Barb.
Yeah,
because she was dying when I got involved, which was mid-80s.
Yeah. Well, when I first joined, they had all of these unit meetings. You know, there was the Tuesday morning. I don't know, there were a couple times during the day. And I went to the Tuesday morning, which was a fairly large group. I know Joan Severance was there, and I remember meeting Joan and knowing about Joan, and there she sits with her big bag, and she's darning socks and stuff, and here's this intelligent woman, you know, darning, and I've done that too.
Well, and smoking.
And I just liked that group, and we met there for a year, and then for some, this was at the Presbyterian Church in Champaign out on Crescent, and that we had to find somewhere else to meet. And so I volunteered my house. And so I think that would have probably then been like 68, you know, roughly in there. And Nell was president, and she always came to that Tuesday morning group too. So everybody had left except her, and she stayed. And she was telling me that she wanted to get this mental health study, local mental health study, started. And she was very interested in it. But of course, as president, she couldn't be the chair. Mm-hmm. But she thought that I would be a natural because of my health background. And she's very, very persuasive. And so the next thing, but I was telling Debbie while she's talking to me, the kids from Bottenfield didn't eat at school, so my kids came home. So Alan comes in, and Nell was a smoker. So he immediately opens the doors, and he's gone around, and he's in like about fourth grade or something like that. And I'm kind of embarrassed that here's the president of League, and he's doing all this. And she says, "No, he's right. I shouldn't be doing this." It was kind of funny. But anyhow, I agreed to that. And that was one of the things that I don't know if you want to now, but I really wanted to share about that mental health study because it was a very...
Well, yeah, go ahead. Tell us about this.
So we had a really... fairly large committee. I think there were at least 10 people, maybe even a dozen. And there were several people from like social work backgrounds that joined the league just to be a part of that study. And I wish I had kept more files on that. They probably went into that file that we had over at Campus Church.
Yeah. We ended up, they're in the archives.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah. Some of them may be at the University Archives, but Anka assures us that they're in the archives, whether they're over there or here, we have access to.
That's good, because it really was, you know, this was not a League study, or a state League study, so we just had to start from scratch. Mm-hmm. And I think we met almost weekly for a while, and we had people in that group that thought anything that was happening in the community was mental health. And then we had those who thought, no, we just look at like the mental health center. And we did a lot of reading. We had a lot of books, and I was lucky to have Marcia Smith, and her husband was the director at Family Service at the time, Neil. And Marcia had a really good background, and so we had a lot of books, and we signed them out to our members, and then we did book reports, you know, just to kind of get ourselves educated for this. That probably went on for about 6 months until we could decide exactly what we wanted to do, and we came somewhere in the middle. We decided to do interviewing at, like, the Mental Health Center. Is it Adler was here, the center.
Okay.
And probably went to a few places like Family Service and some of them they were doing. But what we we found was that people at these various agencies that we were interviewing knew that the others existed, but there was really not much communication going on at all, I mean, referrals and like that. And so one of the things that we even felt from the beginning was that there needed to be some sort of at least referral service. And then again, I'm not sure the date, but it was probably like after a year, the league sponsored a meeting on Saturday and invited people from all the various agencies to come, and we had about 70 people there that day.
Wow.
Now some of them were league members, mm-hmm. but we had a really wonderful response, and it was an all-day meeting. Morning, we had lunch and afternoon, and we broke up into groups, and then those groups kind of reported back, and there was also the feeling there that maybe we need some kind of referral, and I think we even at that point started talking about the 708 legislation that could create a mental health board, which we now have.
Yeah.
And one of our members, Betty Lazarus, was very involved with it.
And so we, and actually to promote that, yeah, so that would have been again within another year. Betty Lazarus was the director at the Mental Health Center at that time.
Okay.
And so we formed a community group to promote a referendum, and so Betty was coming, and then Janie Patrick was a young league member, was very active. She moved from the community, but she and I were kind of designated to go, and I became the treasurer of this. We had a whole amount of about $1,000. Wasn't a lot of money, but and Janie was very involved. I think she was helping more with the PR. We did have did get some information out on TV. We had a volunteer that worked at Channel 3 and just gave her time to put a piece together, and then we went to fairs and passed out literature, and it passed overwhelmingly, and that was 1972. So from our league activity, that would have been about a 3-year period until we got to the referendum.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is.
So league was, you know, there were a lot of other community members too, mainly from some of those agencies, but we had a big part in that. And then that first board, I do remember the name, the chair was Reverend Raphael Miller. And Ray Bloom was lived in Urbana, had a heating out on Main Street,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
They had a daughter that I think was, I don't know, he was involved volunteering, you know, in the health system before. Those two I remember, but we had that full board come, and we had a general meeting and invited others to come too, and it was a great board to get that got started, and but reporting back to us, you know, kind of what was happening there.
Oh, so that's a great story. So is it safe to say that because of your success with this mental health push that you were considered for president of league?
Oh, I don't know for sure. I think they were really desperate. I think I told Deb I was asked to be president at that point, and I really said no in the beginning. I just felt a little inferior. I think most of the presidents had all come from these Ivy League schools. But I remember Jane Bardeen calling me and telling me that they may have all come from Ivy League schools, but you can do it too. You
know? Yeah. And I think that's so true.
And so when then it came to me a second time, I did.
Okay.
I did say I would do it.
And during your presidency, was there any issue or any focus that matched the work you'd already done on the mental health issue?
I should have read this again. I brought copies of, I think these were what I presented at the annual meeting.
Oh, okay.
That's cool.
I dug them out when I was looking for the pictures that I gave Deb. I didn't think I had these anymore, but I thought I could even give them to you because not only do I mention, you know, that, but some of the other issues that not necessarily that I was real involved with, but that League was
right.
doing at, okay. at that time, if you're able
well,
to read.
Can you just don't go into a background on all
and
of
this,
them.
And this sounds kind of silly, but one of the big things that this was not an issue was we had this mimeograph machine that we shared with that Presbyterian church. And so whenever we did our Camp for Candidates, you know, we did forums, but we always sent out these questions and printed that. And Nancy Desmond was the only one who could really run that mimeograph machine without it breaking down. And so she would always be, and it still broke down, and we decided that it was time to get rid of it. So I had to do all these negotiations because we owned half of it and the church owned half of it.
And 10 years later, it was still in myth status, this yeah. office and what was happening in that mimeograph machine.
And so before my term was over, we had sold it to the church, our half, but that took up a lot of time. But I forget what some of the other issues were right now. Well, during that time, we were still working on the Equal Rights Amendment. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was one of my priorities. Okay. And so whatever I could do within League, because I was also, and now at the time, and we were a lot more active, and it seemed like Roberta Johnson, who was a League member, and Rosemary Raisby from Villa Grove, the three of us were off to Springfield. It seemed like about, if not every week, every other week, that there was, since we were one of the three states. But as a League member, I did give some talks at other groups representing League. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the priorities, you know, because it kind of went down then in 82, right after my presidency was over, which was a disappointment.
Yeah.
But
if we broke for a half a minute, would you be able to find your lists of things that were in your president's talks?
I think so. I read this, you know, before I talked to Debbie, and now I kind of forget. I might be in the next one. We participated in a mass transit district survey, and the League was paid $242 for the number of Leaguers that were involved, and then I saw something else here. This was also. I have here that we were it was the 60th anniversary of League. And we had a float in the parade that year, which we had never done before.
Okay.
Yeah. And
yeah, that would have been 60 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd forgotten about that until I looked at that. And then we did a program on immigration in Illinois, and that was in, we had a general meeting in Hermie Cradnier's backyard, one of those big old houses over on Main Street, and had a really big turnout that afternoon. We did vote, a big voter registration drive. We had leaguers at McDonald's over on Route 45, mm-hmm. Cunningham, yeah, mm-hmm. For a number of days, and at the farmer's market. And I think, and I don't say it here, I think we were also out on West Springfield, and one of the radio stations was there to mm-hmm. kind of entice people to come in and oh. register. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The single member districts was also being voted on at that time, and we distributed 5,000 flyers and wrote letters to the editors and gave talks on the single member district.
For the state.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, yes. And then we applied, and this was probably to the state league, and we were picked as one of 12 counties to participate in a juvenile court watching project. And we helped the monitoring, and then I think it was out of that that later then we got our court watching project going. This was Champagne Lard, but that year was a big election year too. Trying to think who was running at that point, but we locally used the Champaign Public Library, and we had a large screen viewing with a panel discussion after, and I remember that was a big turnout too. Mm-hmm. Would that have been when, names are escaping me right now.
Was it Joan or Dale or who?
I can see him. Well, we'll get back if I think about it. Mm-hmm. But we had a panel from WILL then, mm-hmm. and the departments of journalism and political science too, afterwards have a discussion. And we did an asbestos school survey.
Wow.
Sherry Duvall.
You guys are busy.
Yeah.
We got a League of Women Voter Illinois grant for that. And we received $18 for each school that we checked, and Sherry Dewan was the kind of chairing that, and we did 67 schools.
Gee.
The most of any of the other leagues in the state.
Whoa.
It's a lot of schools.
It is a lot of schools.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty much it.
That's a busy 2 years, Jan.
There was a lot of stuff going on. Like I say, I wasn't just...
And so you had about 250 members of the league at that point?
Yeah, it was a good... And one of the other things I remember, we were trying to retain that membership, and as all of you know, there's always those leaguers who... The notice gets on the pile and they forget about it, and we had something like 60-some people that I just knew would keep their membership up if we could just nag them in some way.
Yeah.
And people were a little hesitant, but I had a couple of others help me, and I remember making some of the calls, and it was just like, oh, I'm so embarrassed that the president had to call me to remind me, but of course I'm going to read.
Does that work?
And then, I mean, these were people that I knew did not, mm-hmm. I won't mention any names.
Okay, I got
you. Know, we had you also, that reminds me, you talked about something else that you did a lot of foot on the ground stuff for fund development.
For fun? Oh, well, back in those days, we would send out a fundraising letter, and then I think we timed it so it would be roughly maybe a month later that we would have a meeting where we would get together and then we'd make the assignments, and we, the ones who hadn't responded, we went out and made calls on.
And these were businesses, right?
Yeah, banks. I remember my first time of doing that, which is not a favorite thing to do for most people. Mm-hmm. But I went with Ruth Burks, and I don't know if Ruth has died now too, but she had been a longtime league member. And so I did first call with her, and we went to, again, I don't remember the name, but it was an insurance company. And it was like a father and son. Mm-hmm. The father was the one who usually, you know, made the contribution. And Ruth went in, and she had really nice personality, and she talked to him, and he said, well, I'm going to let my son take care of this today. So we're sitting in there kind of chatting, and you know, we knew what they had contributed, say that they had contributed $25. And so he's sitting there saying, well, yes, I know my father, you know, would like us to continue with this, but what kinds of funds do they expect from, you know, someone like this? And Ruth just says, well, a lot of them give $50. And so he gave $50. And I thought, geez, she's really good. And she was so pleasant about it, you know, and everything. And then I was on my own for the rest of it.
Okay.
And had some, you know, bankers and like that. But we did that for a number of years. So a number of the pictures that I had, that I gave to Deb, were really mainly during my presidency. I had cut out. Some of them were before or a little after, but you'll see that they were often pictures of the people going out for the finance drive, mm-hmm. because we, the PR person would let the newspaper know and they'd come out and have it. So they're either pictures of finance drive or maybe when we had elected the new officers, and then there's some pictures in there of that too.
Oh, good. How are you doing? Do you need a break? Or
I'm okay.
Okay. All right.
I'm too wordy.
No, you're fine. You're telling some great stories. Even since you've retired from nursing, you've still had a very active interest in public health, mental health. Serving with you on the county board, health issues were...
Yeah, actually, one reason I ran for county board was out of my interest in public health. I guess even when I was president, I was working half-time in the office. And it's hard to remember exact, you know, how things flowed, but working on that mental health study, and then... League of Women Voters had also worked to get the public health out in the county, since we were only a public health district within the Champaign and Urbana.
Yeah.
And there were lots of reasons for wanting that. And healthcare, well, again, I remember people from the healthcare consumers group, mm-hmm. came, and I think again we were in Betty Lazarus' living room, and there were several of them. They were coming saying that they were interested in working on a referendum and wondered what they could expect from League of Women Voters. And of course, there was Betty and I and Lizzie and I don't know, several others, and we said that League had tried that twice, and the second time it came very close to, and it was like 20 years between the first attempt and the second attempt. And the second time it came very close, but it didn't quite make it. And we all said, you know, we're tired and getting older, and we couldn't see us spearheading it. But if healthcare consumers takes it on, we will probably be involved in some way. And so they decided that they really did want to go for that, and they called a community meeting that I remember attending over at Disciples on the corner of Springfield and...
Mm-hmm.
And
what is it?
Wright Street.
Right, yeah.
And that room that they used for lots of meetings was full. There were probably 50 people, and it was a variety. There were some league members, a number of the healthcare consumers, and then just people who were generally interested, kind of on their own, not representing a group. But there were some church groups that some people do. And I think it was Healthcare's Consumers' really great organization. They already had decided what kinds of committees we needed, and people signed up, you know, from there. And then, that public health referendum passed, I think it was 96. And we thought, and it passed really overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
The whole county had to vote on it. There was some resentment out in that area. There were so many myths about what was going to happen, which were totally off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
That it had passed more within the cities, but it got something like 34%, I think it was, out in the county. And there were people who out in the county who really wanted it badly, mainly because none of the restaurants out there or even the school cafeterias and stuff got inspections unless something occurred, and then the state would come
mm-hmm.
and check it out. And the immunizations, I think, was another thing,
yeah.
You know, too, that were not available to them. But out of that, Bud Barker was the chair of the county board, who obviously had worked against, and we knew that. And we had a lot of good people apply for that board, and he wouldn't even interview them. And the first appointees were probably also people who had voted against it. And they had 6 months. They started in January. They had 6 months to get that board up and going, and had to have a health plan for the state in order to get their funding. And he appointed three people, I think, in the beginning, and we kept going to the meetings, urging, you know, during public participation for them to get the appointments made. And May came around, and they finally got the last appointment. And they had until July. And here are eight people who don't know each other, and with some we knew who had opposed it, and now have to put a plan together. So Champaign-Urbana District, you know, helped, and they were doing their five-year plan at the time and did it. But we were so discouraged by that whole thing that I just, in getting there, the voters had approved up to a 10-cent levy, and they started out at 1.25,
yeah.
And when they got it to 2.56 or something like that, you know, then they kept talking about how they had doubled it. Well, it was still not even enough to cover the required services, and I had talked to my reps. We had three in the district who all told me they would vote for it, and when I sat there in the meeting and saw two of them vote against it, I went home without thinking about it, called Jerry Parr and said, I'm ready to run. I had been asked to do it before, and I'd always said, no, I'll help others, and so it was my interest in public health that got, and that is just a small part, as Barb knows, of what you do, but I knew that too from my involvement.
Jerry Parr. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, really miss her.
And then after you left the board, you continued to volunteer at Smile Healthy?
Supportive, but not real active.
Okay.
But kind of keeping track of
what
they're doing, and doing some things with healthcare consumers too. Kind of following the board and kind of seeing what was happening like that. I guess so. The dental program for children, that felt really good because it was probably just a year after I was on the board that Lisa Bell used to come with showing us the needs of children with pictures and like that. And so we were told there's not money in the budget, but Jerry Parr again helped us find some funds to get that program up and going and supported it for a couple of years until they were on their own.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've done marvelous work there. You really have.
Well, if you have a passion, you can, it becomes your fun in life.
I know that. Well, I think we're about to conclude here, and I did want to leave some time to get your final thoughts on League, where it is now. Because you've been a long-time member.
Yeah, well, I saw those last couple of questions were...
What do you think?
And just thinking back to when I was first involved, and even with the mental health study, we used to sit when we would put the wording together, and I remember feeling a little shaky about that because they would look at every A and the, and sometimes it was the A and the's. And now I think we've been a lot more flexible as time has gone on, and we probably, I'm not sure in what way, but I think Trish Crowley helped a lot too in changing some of the way we did things that we used to think, oh, this is the League way and we have to do it this way. And it was a little hard to get some of those changes, but I think we've made a number of changes. And, you know, we saw the unit meetings served a purpose at one time, but as more and more women went back to work, it just wasn't feasible. And so we changed that. But we've made changes, and so I'm not sure what the form will be, but I guess... if we want to carry on, we've got to get some younger members and like that, and knowing even in other organizations how things go, we're probably going to have to be even more flexible.
More flexible, yes.
Again, and how we get people that will take the leadership and give a lot of time to it, or I'm not sure how that's going to work out, but...
It is a big challenge, and that's one reason why I am really so grateful that we have a student unit, because they see things so differently
than we do.
and it's good for me, and I think the rest of the board, and if by extension it was the whole membership, to hear how college students today run their lives, you know, and where they put their energy and where they put their time, that I think we can learn a whole lot from them in terms of moving forward.
Yeah, we probably are lucky to have that, because they do.
And they treasure the League. I mean, you know, it's amazing, particularly now because Quad Day's coming up, and you know, and I've spent the last couple of Quad Days on the campus, but to hear them talk, oh, the League of Women Voters, you know, they know the organization in a way, and they want to be involved with that as opposed to either of the two political parties, or they just don't want to sit home on election day, but they don't want to vote if they don't know what's going on either.
Yeah.
So.
And I think League does have a reputation that's not just locally, but nationally.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would hope that League does go on. We are looked on as bipartisan and able, you know, to do things. And so my hope is that...
And taking these students to our state and national conventions is a real eye-opener for them. It really is. It really is.
and they probably help as an eye opener for some of the other older leaders that come to.
So, is there anything else that you want to share that somehow is not covered by this outline? Or,
gosh, I can't think of it enough now. But I think I really valued the league, though. I think it was good for me. It gave me some training background, and I might have, done other things, too.
Yeah.
But it was valuable. I guess I was glad that I did say I would become president too, because I think you do not only a learning process, the people you meet through that from other lakes and like that too. And like Deb said, going to our state convention was interesting that first year, and then did go to national convention a couple of times too. And caucused all night on a health issue that didn't really go anywhere, but it was a good learning experience too.
It certainly is. Yeah. Okay.
And I can see Jimmy. The state convention I went to, the first one was in D.C.
The national. That would have been a national.
National. Yeah. Did I say state? National. And President Carter came, and we had all of the, let's see, are they from the FBI or
Secret Service?
The Secret Service lined up. And all the women, I wasn't one of them, but bring their knitting along and so forth, they had to leave at the door.
Oh, the knitting needles.
Yeah.
Lethal weapons.
Yeah, which is kind of funny.
Well, thank you so much, Jan. You've really added a lot of information and told some great stories.
I hope so. It was kind of reliving some of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
And if you've given us almost an hour and a half of your time, which is great. But if there are other things that, as you go home and reflect on what you said here, if you want to tell us more, we'd be happy to turn the recorder on again.
Okay. I didn't know if you would like copies. I don't really even have to have these. I've been trying to get rid of things.
Here's.
Yeah.